You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
Three things. One, nothing is as funny as a summer day, but three things are more temperate. One, a glass of tap water. Two, your mood after we watch Friends. And three things keep me from emailing you. I count bad breath and receding hairline as one thing, by the way. Three, in all the universe, there are only three things. This is the secret of the universe, or as the French call it, le secret de l'univers.
That's ridiculous. She's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter.
We're talking about comic tension today.
Otherwise known as Aaron Bells is going to horse around a little bit. Horsing around as poetry today on Air Schooner.
Exactly. I could listen to him do that all day.
Aaron Bells is an essayist, satirist, and poet. He's published three books of poetry, Plausible Words in 2005, The Bird Hoverer in 2007, and Lovely Raspberry in 2010.
Bells has degrees from Covenant College, NYU, and St. Louis University. He also taught at St. Louis, among other places throughout the country. His essays have shown up in Books and Culture and the Huffington Post, among other places. And he's now in North Carolina working on a fourth book.
We're going to do something a little bit different on Air Schooner today. Aaron was so funny, we're just going to let him roll for a while, maybe talk about it later. So here's Aaron. We're going to let him roll.
Poetry that's funny, I think you put people in a position of tension if you're writing well. And I don't mean to say that my approach is definitive. I'm just saying all poets, really all artists, musicians, put their audiences in a state of tension that then resolves somehow. We create tension, and then we allow for resolution. In poetry, if you want to say humor, there's a lot of room for tension and resolution. There ought to be. Team. There's no I in team, but there's one in bitterness and one in failure. I think writing humor is only hard if you think that you're writing humor, because then the stakes are too high. My Chiquita. We were friends. We dressed up as bananas sometimes and went out on the town. I called her my Chiquita, all in good fun. We talked about dating, whether we should make our relationship official. We decided no. We were happy to have the freedom of just being friends with banana outfits.
Scott, you got to hold up a minute, because, we've been hosting the show for a little while together now.
Yeah.
And I feel like Aaron's provided me with the opportunity to ask you something I've been meaning to ask you, which is if you think that we can be friends with banana outfits.
I don't know, but there's always, that step where things get a little more serious in a relationship. And also, Aaron decided to get a little serious with us about comedy, too.
Critique. That's not very good. Try doing that differently. That's not very good either. You're not very good at this. I'm an advocate for my own work in the sense that I try to get people to buy my books, but I'm not an advocate for my style. I don't write manifestos or try to convince anyone else that they ought to be writing the way that I write. I don't like most poetry because it seems very self-satisfied and smug, and sort of like it always assumes that I'm interested in something that you have to say, and or some observations that you've made, usually about your own life, which strikes me as completely, can I say BS? You can't pick your friend's nose. You can pick your friends, we used to say, and you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. We said it often and understood what it meant. Man lives within constraints, be they moral or natural. Our little lives were limited by rules or laws, boundaries we knew were there and dared not cross. Nowadays, my son tells me, you can pick your friend's nose, you just can't eat the booger. So there are still constraints, but things have changed, and I'd say for the worse. My father says in his day you couldn't even pick your nose. For him, things have been changing for a long time. Something that I've tried to avoid, although sometimes unsuccessfully, is parodying the more serious poets. Now, I'm not trying, I have to say, parody is a serious effort. It is a kind of subversion. I don't want to set up a false dichotomy between light and heavy poetry, or, you know, earnest poetry and sort of lighthearted comical poetry, because that's not what I'm interested in at all, I think. And sometimes I get that from people, you know, oh, you're a light poet. Well, that's not how I feel. I feel very heavy and sad, like Morrissey.
Well, let's do a case study of it. Give us your tree poem real quick.
Okay. The poem is called Trees. I won't go so far as to say there's no such thing as trees.
Okay, now tell me how that's sad, lonely, and Morrissey, and not just something that's silly.
You know, that poem has an air about it. To me, I don't even know if it's a poem. I read it at a poetry reading one time, and somebody in the audience felt strongly enough about it that she yelled out, "How's that even a poem?" And I said, I don't know that it is. So I think there's this expectation on the part of the audience that you're trying to write a poem. You know, you're always working with audience expectations whenever you're writing or talking. But how's it not just a silly thing? I don't know. There's a kind of, it's kind of morose. I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, I mean, we're always thinking and kind of noodling around different subjects, and it's kind of like a passing comment maybe made by a philosopher. I'll make a lot of observations about the universe and the environment that I live in, but I wouldn't go so far as to say there's no such thing as trees, you know. But, so I think the poem suggests a context. And what I think is interesting about the poem for people, because I get a lot of people that like that two-line poem, I think maybe what they're attracted to is the suggested context. It's one that they recognize. Worms. Cyclists, as a rule, think bikers are cheating because they have engines. Pedestrians, in turn, think cyclists are cheating. They use wheels. People in wheelchairs think pedestrians have a leg up for obvious reasons, but pedestrians think the same thing about people in wheelchairs. They use wheels. What makes people in wheelchairs unique is that they also think cyclists and bikers are cheating. Their disdain is uniform. The wheelchairists' hypocrisy lies, however, in their use of automobiles. Everyone uses automobiles except worms. Worms think they're better than everyone. Worms think they're more authentic than everyone. This is why people say worms are self-righteous. To worms' credit, however, they aren't hypocritical, except the ones that glide down the sidewalk on hundreds of tiny legs, blithely ignoring their wilted, sun-blackened comrades. Those worms are called millipedes. Those worms are really bad apples. I had an interesting conversation when I interviewed John Ashbery when I was writing my dissertation, which I wrote about comedy, popular comedy's influence on modernist poetry. Six years ago, I was sitting in Ashbery's apartment talking about this very question. I said, you know, I was at a reading of yours at the New School, and I was busting a gut, and there were people around me that had, you know, really expensive glasses and stuff, and like it seemed like they were wearing ascots and everything, and they kept looking at me judgmentally, like, why are you laughing at this genius of a man? And I said, I asked Ashbery, you know, does it offend you if I'm laughing and everybody else is kind of quiet, or how? And he said, that happens all the time. It all depends on the audience. He said some audiences will just laugh and laugh and laugh at everything he says, and some audiences, like, he said he read at a small college, and they didn't really know what to make of him. They were expecting poetry, and when they think of poetry, they think of something that's like Robert Frost or sort of dignified. And then Ashbery comes in with a sort of cut-and-paste pop art kind of surrealist stream of consciousness stuff that often has little curlicues in the logic that make people laugh if they're willing to laugh. So when I face an audience and they don't laugh, I don't mind. That's one thing, I'll tell you, that gives me a really big advantage over a typical comedian, because I'm not a comedian. So if I go into a comedy venue and I read my poems and there's no laughter, it's fine. Regret. I can't bear to look at you, she said, as she ate a banana she had named Stephen. I was reading at a college, and one of the distinguished elder emeritus professors came to the reading with his wife, and I think there were about 400 people at the reading. So it was a big deal for the college. It was a bigger deal for me, really, because it paid really well, and they had built me up like I was a big deal. So I didn't know anything about this distinguished professor, really, except that he was distinguished. But I started the reading by saying, I'd like to begin with a quote from John Milton, but instead I'm going to begin with a quote from my friend Daniel Borzutsky. And people sort of chuckled, like, I don't think, you know, at the beginning you don't really know what you're getting into. But when I said, I'd like to begin with a quote from John Milton, this distinguished professor's eyes lit up, and I found out later he's a Miltonist, and he's written four books about Milton. So he was waiting to see, which quote am I going to pull from Milton? And when I said Borzutsky, I could see this. His look became like lead. I mean, he looked at me like, I mean, he was staring icicles at me the rest of the reading. And then he didn't say anything. He left and didn't shake my hand. He walked out. So. You bore me. You bore me. So be it. I bore you and enjoy doing it. Let us learn to bore each other without worrying about it. You act all shy around me, and that's your prerogative. If I act shy around you, it's because you're pretty and I want to kiss you. I wish I were Canadian. If I were Canadian, I could be boring and get away with it. You'd say, this man is from Canada. He bores me. He acts shy. He wants to kiss me. And you would let me kiss you, not only on the lips, but on the cheek, neck, shoulder, belly maybe. Because I would be Canadian and have scruffy hair and big eyes. But alas, you bore me too. You act like you're from Michigan. My family's kind of, I think, had it with me. So with my snarky comments, or my really flat observations, or my attempt at ultra cleverness. So I'm getting a little jaded about myself. So now my writing is more rhapsodic, and it still has a kind of problem of language built into it, because I find that impossible to avoid. I'll tell you, when I'm writing now, I'm not going for the objective of humor, but it's ironic that when I read some of my new poems, I still get not gut-busting kind of laughter like I got on some of the comedy things, but I still get a lot of laughter and warmth. What? Every day I get emails that say things like, Bells, we should have done that one thing that one time, remember? Really, though, how are things? And I always reply the same way, like, Dude, I do not know who you are. Where do I know you from? But I never hear back. I save all those emails in a special folder labeled I Hate My Life.
He may hate his life, but, man, I wouldn't mind hanging out with him for a couple of days.
Not at all. It sounds like just hanging out with him, he would just do poems. It doesn't even sound like, everything he says sounds like one of his poems.
Exactly, and I like the theory behind it. You know, I usually pick on my wife if she laughs at her own jokes, but I kind of enjoy the fact that Aaron Bells cracks himself up.
I mean, it's unavoidable. Thanks for listening to Air Schooner today. It is a hot summer in Nebraska, and Air Schooner's on fire.
That's ridiculous.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Robert Fugli, Ted Wheeler, and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.